A Podshape production.
He was a goofy dad, you know. He did all these little funny jokes, and as a little kid, I thought they were hilarious.
Linda Willimer and her husband Darren dropped her father, John Jensen, home on Sunday after a family lunch. They say he was in good spirits, but the 68-year-old has disappeared without a trace.
At no time has he indicated suicidal tendencies. That fall has never sat well with me, I'll be honest.
Well, the discovery of John Jensen's car outside the Lancelin Beach Hotel is a big breakthrough in the police search for the missing Ocean Reef grandfather.
Look, he did have a bit of depression, and I put the light on and then I just saw blood. All these blood footprints, pretty much what it was very in your face then, and there was quite a lot of blood, and I was like, what the hell has happened here? And I yelled out, and I think he was murdered. No, I 100%, hand on my heart, believe he was murdered, because this is my dad. This is my story. This is what happened.
Belle Willmer is John Jensen's youngest daughter. She is an older sister, and as you heard in the last episode, that relationship has become strained since the disappearance of their dad on June 25, 2017. Belle's mother passed away from a heart attack in the family home 6 years before the last moment they saw their dad. Belle was the first person to find her mum's body in the back room. Her dad, Jesper, continued to live in the family house until he went missing.
Yeah, absolutely. He wasn't worried. That didn't... Again, it didn't... That's where he wanted to be. You know, that was our family home, and we still had fond memories. And what happened was just, you know, a tragic situation, but it wasn't obviously caused by anyone else. It was obviously meant to happen. No one else was involved, and the only thing I struggled the most, sort of going in that back room, but actually going to the house didn't bother me at all. You know, it took me a few months to sort of get myself, okay, just do it, you know, because like every time I went in there, I just kept saying, Mum, you know, the images there. But I got over that fairly quickly. And
Jesper had adapted to life without his wife across the 6 years since she passed. He'd started to play golf and hang out with his friends. He had a small but close group of friends because he was a bit of a quiet guy. He enjoyed staying at home, watching telly in the front room of the Ocean Reef house that they lived in. Across the period of years, John's health started to suffer. He developed a few medical issues which made it harder for him to pursue his love of golf. It came to a head in 2016 when he went to his GP for some medical issues.
Well, the thing that we were trying to get on top of was his peripheral neuropathy, and that was basically nerve damage or nerve pain in his feet. Being a labourer, he had back problems, but that's fairly common, you know, that with bricklayer all his life. But the recent thing that had come up around then was, you know, we couldn't figure out why his feet were swelling and things like that. So we're trying to get on top of the neuropathy pain. So I was the one that actually took him to a pain management specialist, they called, to try and look at other ways of, you know, instead of, you know, hard medication and stuff like that, and, you know, that the sort of stuff's with your mind. That's sort of why I took him there.
And so in the coroner's report, which we've obviously had a look at, it was mentioned he saw a pain specialist, which is, I'm guessing, the pain specialist you took him to.
Correct.
His pain was a 9 out of 10 normally. And when the medication wore off, it was a 1 out of 10. So this pain medication he was taking was pretty useful for his pain.
It was, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, 100%. And, the other issues were sort of flare-ups. It wasn't all the time. You know, it was something that he could, you know, we could manage. And he'd like, you know, with other, like my husband's got chronic fatigue, you know, he's been able to manage, you know, his... go through ups and lows and what have you. And Dad was able to do the same thing. We were getting on top of it. But that's fairly normal for any 60, you know, odd year old man.
What sort of drugs was your dad on for his chronic back pain?
Morphine patches, and that worked. That worked really well. Obviously, they just played around with the dosage just to get the dosage right. The morphine patches worked really well. That didn't help the neuropathy pain. just looking at what other options there were, because he was eventually put on this horrendous drug, which should not be prescribed to anyone, and especially people, you know, in his condition and with the other drugs that he was on. I think it was the wrong move, but he was put on this particular drug, and that was the drug which did make him feel really crappy, you know, and it had side effects, but he was aware of the side effects. We were having regular, you know, appointments to keep on top of it, and, you know, and realised, no, we need to wean off this particular medication. And that's exactly what happened.
Was that the oxycodone?
No, that was actually the Neurontin that I'm talking about. The oxycodone, again, you know, it was sort of pushed onto him in a little way. There was someone else in his life that was sort of saying, here, this is a good option. It's really good for pain medication. And I was the one going, but Dad, this is really strong medication. You know, I'd actually had that when I had a cesarean. And I was like, Dad, this is pretty strong stuff. And, you know, he quickly realised, well, it's not actually helping him. And, he, you know, not only was the doctor saying, you know, take this sparingly, and he was taking it sparingly. I remember Dad going to me towards the end, Bindi, you know, I've got so much, I'm not taking many at all. Like, he had 30 sitting there, and he goes, the doctor's like, well, do you need any more? And he goes, no, I've still got like 30 there. So the doctor, he wasn't taking, you know, he'd gotten on top of that. That was not the issue.
And so he was also on antidepressants, but he stopped pretty quickly.
Okay, so he was put on a couple of different antidepressants, but for different reasons. First of all, it was to use as a nerve blocker. So it wasn't actually for depression. There's various types of antidepressants that are not necessarily for depression. It's for nerve problems. And he was trialled, I think, one or two different ones, which they just didn't sit well, you know, diarrhea and vomiting. And so, you know, he ceased those quite quickly. So that's why he ceased those. I guess around this period, which was about a couple of months period, so we're talking late 2016, we're sort of, you know, December, which was when they were really trying to figure out, you know, to get his medications right. But again, that's fairly normal. I look at his GP records, they were doing the right thing. Seeing him fortnightly going, oh, we've got to adjust this, and he was going, yeah, he's feeling better, and, you know, we were getting on top of it. It was a brief period of time that has been made out to be for 12 months. It wasn't. It was, you know, one or two months, they're like, okay, you know, saw a new doctor, and he goes, well, let's get off his Neurontin. That was the first thing they had to do. We started weaning him off. So, you know, over that January through to up until May, he was fully weaned off this medication. And you have to wean it. You can't just take it off.
What is that medication? Sorry, and what does it do?
It's Neurontin or gabapentin. It's supposed to reduce the swelling in your feet. And I think, from memory, it sort of did help the pain, but, you know, it had horrible side effects. So it's a drug that I don't think he should ever have been put on, and it was, you know, very important for him to wean off. And once he was off it, you could tell he was sort of clear of mind. And because he was a strong character, even though the pain came back, that wasn't an issue. I mean, this man was a strong, strong man, you know, a bit of pain. You know, he was going to, you know what I mean? He's sort of getting on top of it. He wasn't giving up. He was just aware of just trying to get the dosage right.
What were the side effects that were horrible for him?
Look, he did have, it did cause a bit of depression, but he was aware of the depression and he spoke to us about it. So, you know, he'd actually reached out a couple of times to his close mate, and I commend him for that. Good on you, you know. We need to all speak up if we're not feeling 100%, you know, but it was just, and that's where he wasn't just sitting in the corner going, I'm giving up on life. He's reaching out, you know, and it said to his mate, you know, he goes, I'm obviously feeling pretty crappy right now. He goes, even in his own words, and I've got it in writing, lucky I'm not the suicidal type, you know, I've got time on my side.
So Belle says her dad knew the gabapentin or Neurontin was no good for him and it gave him horrible side effects. I wanted to know from a doctor what this drug is actually used for, so I reached out to a friend. Let's call him Dr. J. He specialises in pain medication, and he'd know clinically how this drug can affect someone.
So I've been a doctor for, I think I've lost count, 11 years now. And as part of that time, I've spent 5 years training to be an anaesthetic specialist. And as part of my anaesthetic training, we do specialise in the management of acute pain.
Can you explain what Neurontin is and what it's generally prescribed for?
So Neurontin is the trade name of a medication called gabapentin. So it's an anticonvulsant medication that's used to treat various forms of epilepsy and other seizure disorders, but it's also prescribed for what we call neuropathic pain. So that's essentially pain arising from a dysfunction or disease of the nervous system. So some examples of that are sort of diabetic neuropathy or pain that you get after having, post-herpetic neuralgia, which is like shingles, and people get ongoing chronic pain from that, and gabapentin can be used to try and treat these pains. This nerve pain's quite notoriously difficult to treat, and so often there are various other medications that doctors try and use to treat this pain, and they're not always effective. So gabapentin is one of them that gets used, especially in the treatment of sort of back pain or sciatica. And then obviously they try and use opioids to try and treat pain, but generally these are also quite ineffective.
And from your knowledge, what are some of the side effects involved with taking gabapentin?
With any medication, and some of those side effects are common and some are quite rare. If we think specifically about the nervous system, the common things that get described with gabapentin or Neurontin are dizziness, headache, somnolence, but they can have other side effects like tremor, and even concentration impairment. With these medications, you can get some mood disturbances. So common things, common side effects from gabapentin include anxiety, confusion, and depression. You can get insomnia, and then uncommonly or rarely, you can have emotional labile symptoms or agitation, aggression, and very rarely psychotic disorders as well. Neurontin also has been recognised that it can contribute to feelings of depression and suicidal ideation. It's even mentioned in the product disclosure statement or the product information statement that comes inside the box. And there's a statement in there that says patients on these medications need to be monitored for worsening symptoms of depression or suicidal thoughts or behaviour or any other unusual changes in their mood.
The other interesting thing that came up after speaking with Dr. J was a bit that I originally missed in my read-through of the coroner's report. The report said that on May 11, 2017, just 6 weeks before John went missing, he went to a chemist and got a prescription filled for 100 Neurontin tablets. In a follow-up text with Bell, she says there was no way he used those tablets. As she said earlier in the podcast, he was weaning off this drug that was giving him depression. When police and family searched his home, there was no Neurontin left in his pillbox. Dr. J explains that coming off a drug like Neurontin is usually a slow process, and coming off the drug too quickly can be even more troublesome.
So any patient that's been on these medications for a significant period of time, they can get physical dependence, whereas the body gets used to the drug, and upon sort of immediate cessation, they get withdrawal symptoms. And withdrawal symptoms tend to be some of the things we've mentioned, but also dysphoria, irritability, anxiety, even backache, joint pains, abdominal cramps, nausea, vomiting. The period of withdrawal, or the time taken from stopping the medication to having those withdrawal symptoms, does depend on the dose that you've been on and how long you've been on the medication for, but can vary between sort of, you know, a day to a week or so. When you are going to stop these medications, best done with the assistance of a physician that prescribes these drugs regularly so that they can guide you in dose reduction. And usually that's done over a period of weeks to months even, depending on how long you've been on the medication and how the dose you've been taking.
So we know that this drug is pretty heavy, and as Belle said, she didn't feel it was right for her dad. This correlates with the doctor's notes about John's visit he made to his GP in January, February and March of 2017.
In January 2017, which is the year he went missing, he went to his GP, as you've mentioned, quite depressed. The coroner's report says that his consequent visit back to the GP a month later and then again the following month was, in his words from the doctor's notes, really good now and fantastic. So there is proof your dad was suffering some depression in early January and then was able to come out of that fog due to the medication he was coming off and equally his own management of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, can I just read you a little bit of an excerpt here from the incident summary? I just thought it was quite interesting that, and this was noted pretty much on the 28th of June, so this is the second day of the search up in Lancelin. Confirmed, as you just said, confirmed no signs of dementia cited by the doctor last week and was very clear in the head, appeared chirpy, you know, and had good pain control. He'd commented that he's not suffering from depression, and during his treatment, at no time has he indicated suicidal tendencies. That's from the GP.
We're going to step just a couple of months back to before your dad went missing. He fell down some stairs.
Look, that's a weird one. That fall has never sat well with me, I'll be honest. That was actually what sort of set him back. And that, at the time of his disappearance, it wasn't all the other stuff that was going on. It was that fall, because that was a pretty serious fall. When I say fall, I have doubts over that particular day. It was Easter Sunday and... you know, Dad had already had a fall from lower down in these stairs because he's got brick stairs at the front of his house. Now, I can't remember when it was, probably, I don't know, December 2016 or something. He had actually had a little slip from the bottom of the stairs. It was only, you know, two stairs because at the time, unfortunately, someone thought it would be a good idea for him to trial marijuana and, encouraged that and provided that to him, and it's the first time he'd had it and he had a fall.
Was that medical marijuana or was it just normal?
No. And it's something that he'd never had in his life, and I don't think he should have ever been introduced into the mix at all. But I think that was the cause of that particular fall. He felt like an idiot, you know. He's like, oh, I'm falling. But it didn't really sustain too many injuries, okay? But this particular fall, it was pretty substantial. I'm talking, it was from the top this time, the top of these brick stairs. And apparently it's written down that he just slipped on his slippers, and it's been a bit downplayed a little bit. But, I look at his photos of his injuries and I don't know, if he was wearing slippers, you know, his toe has been fully sliced and cut open, and he's got a massive egg on his right hand arm and up here, and apparently he's put his arm down, you know, hand to protect his face, and, you know, his hand's, you know, shattered and broken his wrist. And, I mean, they only realised in June, not long before he went missing, that he had actually shattered all the bones in his hand as well, and that wasn't picked up at the time, you know. And he was told, unfortunately, now it's sort of too late for more surgery. You probably do need more surgery down the track, but...
Well, thinking about it now, we don't know if that was a fall or not, or if something else happened on that day. But we don't have any, obviously, evidence of anything. But we have our doubts over that one. But as Belle said, that was really his main problem at the time, because he'd got on top of other things. It was just this badly broken wrist.
Was that was in April. That was, you know, middle of April. And before that, March, you know how we said the GP's like, he's feeling fantastic. Dad had tried to go play 9 holes of golf.
John wasn't a well man. Chronic pain, swollen feet, and a broken wrist with a bunch of different tablets to control those medical issues. He had indicated some issues with depression, which may have been caused by the medication he was on, or simply by him not being as agile as he used to be. But it would seem from the doctor's report a few days before his disappearance, he was okay. In fact, In the GP's words, he was chirpy. In the coroner's report, which was delivered in October last year in Perth, the coroner stated that Bell, his daughter, had said that at some point her dad had told her that drowning would be the worst possible way to go. Bell also made a statement to the police saying that if there was any chance of Mr. Jensen taking his life, he would have done so at Mullaloo Beach, a place of great comfort to him where he felt closest to his wife. When Bell gave evidence during the inquest, she was adamant that at the time of his disappearance, her dad was not suicidal.
See, my words have been twisted, okay? So around the time of the search...
Did you have that conversation with him?
I didn't have the conversation around drowning. We were open about life and death, having found my mum, you know, in the home. We did have conversations about that, but our conversations were, oh, my God, thank God she was at home. Thank God. We literally said that she wasn't missing because we had that 24-hour period where she technically was.
Belle, talk to me about the morning of Sunday, the 25th of June, 2017. You were going to lunch as a family.
Well, actually, no. It wasn't actually sort of planned like that. I knew that Dad was catching up with Ken and Geezer, and normally I was actually the one that used to go with to lunch with him. I would take him, and we'd done that quite a few times. But this particular time, I was really busy, as I said, with work, and I was working from home, and, you know, I'd actually just dropped the kids down at Grandma's house down in Claremont. And, yeah, just before 12, I remember because they'd had lunch booked in for sort of 1 or 1.30, I think it was. And I just rang him on the way home and I just said, I'm making sure my sister's still taking you because she did have a bit of a history of sort of cancelling on him last minute. And if that was the case, then I was definitely going to, you know, sort of step in and take him. And it just happened to be that conversation. I was like, Benny, why don't you come, you know? And I'm so glad I made that decision. I went, you know what, yeah, I'll come. And I'm glad I did because that was the last time I saw him.
So Belle, her sister, Dad and a few friends catch up for lunch at Hillary's Boat Harbour at Dome Cafe. It's Perth in June. The place is buzzing. Families doing the same thing as Belle and her sister. Visitors browsing the shops on the boardwalk. Kids with ice creams. An idyllic Sunday afternoon in sunny Perth. Belle clearly remembers her dad's frame of mind that day.
He was happy. Everything was fine. Like, he was in good spirits. There was nothing that stood out as me to be concerned or worried, you know. It was a nice lunch. You know, the only thing I regret is, you know, when we got home, because we all went in the same car and, you know, my sister took us home. The only regret I had is not actually going in, you know, because I pretty much, we drove off straight away in our separate cars and I wish I'd sort of gone in and I guess spoken to him. Because in hindsight now, I realise that there probably were things that he did want to talk about. But no, on that particular, he was fine. And even Ken and Geezer said, you know, we're talking about catching up for Christmas in July again because I'd gone, you know, with all those guys and we'd had a beautiful lunch, you know, the previous Christmas in July. And we said, let's do that again, you know. We had plans for the future.
So this is Sunday afternoon. When did you expect to see your dad again?
Probably the next night or within a couple of days, you know. I was, you know, seeing him regularly, not as much. I mean, I have a young family and working hard, but certainly within a couple of days, you know, I'd at least speak to him like very regularly, you know. But yeah, I certainly did not expect that to be the last time I'd ever see my dad.
That afternoon would be the last time anybody reported seeing John again. The next morning at around 6:45 a.m., John Jensen's neighbour headed out to her car to go to work on Monday, the 26th of June, 2017. As she walks down her driveway, she looks across the road and sees that John's garage door is open and his car's not there. She found this unusual as she hadn't seen John drive for a few weeks, but she also knew his daughters sometimes drove his car, so she left for work. At 4:15 that same day, the neighbour arrives home and John's car is still missing and the garage door is still wide open. She now thinks this is strange, but she didn't want to be a sticky beak, so she waited a few hours, and then at 7:02 that night, Belle receives a text from her sister. Belle's sister, who first got the text from the neighbour, had been at the dentist that day for surgery, so couldn't really talk. So she texts her sister, Belle, and asked if she could head to their dad's house to see what was happening.
I didn't know anything was wrong until about 8:30 that night. I saw a text message from my sister saying, can you go check on Dad? You know, the neighbour saying that his garage door's been up and his car's gone. And I was like, what? So I immediately called his house. Obviously got no answer. And I looked at Darren and gone, is this going to happen all over again? Like, immediately, having gone through it with Mum, you think the worst, don't you?
Yep.
Of course. So, yeah, I was panicking. I was shaking. I'm like, no, I'm going to do this. And I'm trying to tell myself, handle it better than last time, Belle. Like, I'm so angry at myself for what I did with Mum. And I was like, just handle this situation better. But anyway, yeah, I was lucky that the neighbour was out the front. She was loving, you know, and obviously very caring and looking after him. And she was worried. You know, she was out the front looking stressed, and she met me there. And I said, will you come in with me? So I found my mum dead, you know, and she goes, of course I will. You know, I'm so grateful she did that. So I went and got the key, because he kept the spare key in the garage. Went to use it to walk in the house, but the door was unlocked. And that was very unusual. Dad always kept his door locked. So I thought, well, hey, that's a bit unusual. And second thing that unusual, that there was no lights on. Yeah, we're talking sort of 8:40 probably around that time, and it was pitch black. I was like, what's going on here? Because even the neighbour would say he always had that front light on, because that's where he lived, that front lounge room. That's pretty much where he lived, in his recliner and watching your TV. So anyway, yeah, walked in, and what looked like initially, this sounds odd, but sort of feathers scattered in the distance in the kitchen area. And I was like, what's going on over there? And I put the light on, and then I just saw blood. Yeah, all these blood footprints. Pretty much, what it was very in your face then, and there was quite a lot of blood, and I was like, what the hell has happened here? And I yelled out, and the neighbour yelled out, and I noticed a small glass pane was broken. And at the time, I'm like, oh my God, has he accidentally hurt himself? He's gone to hospital. He's gone, you know, what the hell's happened? I did not know. A million things run through your head, and I didn't want to make the same mistakes again. I just called my husband. That was just the first thing I thought to do, and then he called the police. So yeah, we just waited for them to arrive. And it was, yeah, it was really, really bizarre. Really, really, really bizarre.
Darren, do you remember the call from Belle?
Yeah, look, when she left, you knew something was up. It was unusual for Jasper's car not to be there and all that. And then as soon as I got the call and I just heard blood everywhere, I didn't know if something had recently happened or if someone was still in the house and something could happen. So I just got off the phone straight away and called the police and just gave them a brief description. Father-in-law's missing, there's blood in the house. I don't know if anyone else is in the house. Things like this. I didn't know if my wife was in danger or anything like that. So that's what I told them, and they raced over there. As it turns out, it was just the scene at the house and no one else there. But this was totally unexpected.
In the next episode of Dad's Gone.
Well, the discovery of Jawn Jensen's car outside the Lancelin Beach Hotel is a big breakthrough in the police search for the missing Ocean Reef grandfather.
The investigation in those early days changed as soon as that vehicle was located, because what they gave us is the last known position. On this CCTV footage, you can't see who is in the vehicle.
In your opinion, could your dad drive?
No. No, especially after that fall, no.
So I was unable to confirm during the investigation who was driving that vehicle or even how many passengers were in that vehicle. The initial assessment of the investigation that continues to this day is that no evidence of any criminality has been located.
Silence is not what you need when you have this type of ambiguous loss. You need people to speak up. And there are people that know what happened to my dad.
There are over 38,000 long-term missing person cases in Australia, and the story you've just heard is one of them. We want to continue to help bring these emotional stories of ambiguous loss to you so we can spread the word and hopefully get some closure for the families. For as little as the price of a coffee a month, you can help support us to keep creating this content. Just head to our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes.